There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 639, October 8th, 2013. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the all-new offering from Vlasic Foods, the Sebastian Vettel's Deep Kimchi, now available at all F1 tracks and your local Winn-Dixie.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Mark Webber gets sponsorship from Webber Barbecue Grills. Ferrari should have signed Hülkenberg. Come on, man! Hamilton says he deserves to be fighting up front. And of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi, Mr. Nasser Hamid, and special interview this week, Stefano Coletti. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Good to see you. Good to be in the palatial studios. How is life for the Duke of Dijon?
The Duke of Dijon is excited. Palatial Studios is getting a new roof. We're getting a whole new heating system put in, and the cafeteria is being upgraded to keep the kimchi nice and fresh.
Very good.
Exactly. So there you have it. It's pretty much a Vettel marathon from now on. As strong as he is, what can anybody do, Nas?
Well, all they can do now is just wait for the season to be over. Because we're back to the Schumacher days, you know. I mean, it's motor racing, you know, even if it's in Timbuktu, it's exciting. But it's more exciting when you don't know the result before the race. You know, but in this case, you know what's going to happen.
Exactly. And I remember last year, so many different winners. It was so exciting. And now we have Lewis Hamilton coming out after the race, whimpering a little bit, saying that, oh, yes, it reminds me of when I was a young child and I was watching Schumacher winning every week. It was boring. Everybody would be sleeping.
You know, I saw those comments, and he's right. But the question is, if he was going 4, 5, 6 years in a row as a world champion, would he be saying that?
Exactly.
So there's a tit for tat at every turn of life and Formula One.
No, absolutely. And I find it interesting how day in and day out Vettel's comments really struck home. And we may have forgotten to mention this after the Singapore Grand Prix, when he says that most of the drivers hang their balls at the pool while he's busting his balls in the garage, making sure that the car is at its peak performance, tip top. What'd you think of that?
Well, you know, it's like those things, well, you know.
Remember how gentle and loving Sebastian Vettel was in 2007? So sweet, so tender. And now, whoo dogs, it's changed a lot.
Like Michael Schumacher, Ayrton Senna, Niki Lauda, these people were very, very dedicated, committed to the program, and many others also. And the results are there, so you really cannot complain, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm not complaining.
There should not be any penalty for being successful.
There is no penalty for being successful, excuse me, but still, he seems to be getting a little cockier and cockier as each race goes by. And I'm sure, you know, winning and hearing that German national anthem, it's got to affect him. He's got the testicles begin to swell.
Well, you know, we have some other data on him. I mean, just think about it, man. If you were his age and you were in Formula One, just to be a Formula One driver, you know, I'll tell you, in my lifetime, just one time I was able to get into the present-day paddock, okay, it's a different world. You really feel different. Not that you feel special, but it's like, wow, you turn around. I'll never forget this. I was talking to Keith Sutton, one of the very well-known photographers, and he was kind of like waiting for something to happen. I said, what's going on? He says, I'm waiting for Vijay Mallya's helicopter. He apparently had the contract to do photographs for his team. So, I mean, this is what happens when you're in that. You know, I remember looking around, your man, Alonso, was walking by, just like that. And it does that. And if you are successful, obviously it will get to you.
Chills, frisson.
Yes, sir.
Exactly. So anyway, yes, we did go to Korea, and I was very disappointed that we didn't hear much of the Gangnam Style.
Yes, but I think what is really in deep kimchi is the Korean Grand Prix itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there are some reports. I mean, I heard from quite a few sources, media also, of course, on the web, that this is the last hurrah, and Bernie needs to do a couple of chop-chop anyway to accommodate all these races.
I agree, and if you notice the close-ups of the audience, the people in the stands are always very close. They never pan out to see the whole grandstand, and there's a reason for that, Nasser.
Yes.
But still, it's a very nice track, actually. The facility is
yes.
good.
I was watching one of the drivers, when they do this... the lap of the track.
Right.
This is fantastic.
It's a very nice track. Yeah. Very entertaining, demanding. I think it's a great track. It's just not in a country where there's motivation or passion for Formula One.
And it's hours away from Seoul,
Exactly. I don't know what they were thinking.
I mean, they could have put it in the DMZ, demilitarized zone. All the North Koreans, how much they love Formula One.
Yeah,
they would have come in.
I know. And you get binoculars for free in the DMZ.
Yeah, exactly. Just watch out for the hack job.
Yes, thank you very much. But still, a very exciting weekend. Some surprises, but then in the end...
It was no surprise.
There was no surprise.
It was like, thanks, but no thanks.
Well, that's the biggest problem, is now everybody's really looking forward to 2014. The only thing is, what's really surprising for me is how Fernando is keeping it all inside. His therapist must be damn good.
That love festival is now... for sure over.
Yeah, it's tough.
Luca loving Nando. And let me just go back to what you were saying about a few minutes ago about Sebastian Vettel, how he has become. Let me tell you, it was, I think, in 2005 when Nando was on his way to his second world championship, and he was on the cover of Autosport quite a bit in those days because of winning a lot of races. And when he had a goatee, so he was on the podium with, I think, Schumacher or Cup Raikkonen, top line drivers of that day. And I'm looking at this, and he was very young, 24, 25 years old, 26 maybe. And I remember saying to myself, for a guy to be somebody who had toppled Michael Schumacher, so successful, so young, there is no chink in his armor. The guy has nothing going against him. So, I mean, it was like a perfect racing driver, but... all we had to do was wait two more years, and reality comes, proving we're all humans.
Yes, indeed. But still, the biggest problem with Fernando going to Ferrari, and you have to remember the excitement. It was almost the perfect pairing. A fantastic driver, Latino, with somewhat of a temper, going to Ferrari. The Pope was involved.
Fluent in Italian.
Oh, I mean, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing.
Won on his debut.
Yeah, I mean... it was such a good marriage that it was too good to be true. And unfortunately, Ferrari couldn't deliver the package.
Well, how many years has he been with Ferrari now? 5 years?
Or four years? 4 years.
So I guess it's the 4 year itch that ended the love fest.
It's pretty good.
Here's the reason. Luca was never a fan of Barry White and Love Unlimited Orchestra. So this was a limited time offer, and
it's true.
He slipped out twice.
And I'm sure Flavio Briatore calls Fernando, and they talk about the old days. The excitement, the wins, the championships.
The best part of Fernando and Flavio relationship was when Flavio got married. Nando drove the wedding car. That was so beautiful. How many people can say that?
It is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But still, let's talk about Korea and qualifying.
Yes.
There were no surprises. I mean, for me, I continue to shed tears to see Williams down there with Caterham.
That is a very sad story.
It's the saddest story of the year for me, to see Williams who had some high moments last season, and they just went downhill. Caterham and Marussia and Williams.
They have gone down so much that their star driver, the man who gave them a win in Spania, he is saying that if this continues, he might just stay in Venezuela and, you know, watch the oil flow.
It's true. No, it's got to be very brutal for him going to such a team with so much history.
And paying so much money.
I know. It's a sad state of affairs. Surprisingly, both Force Indias make it out of Q1, which is good. I like that. And both McLarens don't get out of Q2, which is typical now. We're used to that. So there really wasn't much excitement in this qualifying session, except for, okay, Kimi's got some back pain.
Sam Michael is at McLaren, right?
Correct.
And how was Williams doing when he was there? No, I'm just being silly. I don't think it's his fault.
God, I hope not. Yeah, because you're right.
But you know,
the timing wasn't great.
Yeah. Well, you know, earlier when we did an interview a few weeks ago with Mark Priestley, worked for McLaren for many years.
Correct.
He said they went with the system. I don't remember if it was the pull rod or push rod kind of deal. And when you go in a direction, it's like a big ship. You just cannot turn it on.
No, you can't just double back real quickly.
Yeah. So I think for McLaren, sooner or later they're going to win. But I think
not this season.
No, of course not. But with Honda coming back,
yes,
that padding, I'm really, really excited about.
I agree. I think the biggest question is, what's Pirelli going to do next season? Because really, a lot of teams don't like Pirelli. They blame Pirelli for some teams doing well, like Sauber, who's picked up the pace. Other teams, like Force India, who's taken a number of steps backwards, people are saying it's because of the 2012 design Pirellis that came into mid-season. Ferrari was looking good, and then all of a sudden, with these new tires, they're stinko. Pirelli is taking it on the chin a lot at every Grand Prix. I'm really surprised they're going to come back in 2014.
Well, it is what it is. But talking of Sauber, you know, it was the first time this season both cars made it to Q3. And while our man Nico Hülkenberg has established himself as a star of the future, Senor and amigo Esteban Gutierrez, after a slow start compared to the season, to the start of, you know, first half of the season, especially if you compare his times with Hülkenberg, you know, this was a big difference. But now with his performance lately, last few races in qualifying especially, he is now getting on the Mexican radio on a regular basis. Qualified ninth, right behind his teammate. And I'm hopeful, as I have was for many years, for Romain Grosjean and Nico Hülkenberg, that amigo Esteban Gutierrez will be able to up his game and be a strong contender next year. And next year, you know, his teammate will be Sergei Sirotkin. I think so. And then we will see how good he really is. And,
I agree. That's going to be his big opportunity. But I concur. His learning curve is finally reached and beginning to peak, and his qualifying is looking good. He looked great in Korea. That track maybe suited him better than other tracks, but I concur. Esteban Gutierrez is doing well. He should be able to stay and be comfortable at Sauber for 2014. Hülkenberg, on the other hand, is doing fantastic, and if he's not signed at Lotus F1, my jaw will drop, because he's their best chance. That's the best team that has an opening for Hülkenberg. He's got to go there.
Well, they may have two openings, depending on how badly they need the money. And you think about it, if they are behind paying the guy who is winning races for them, or Kimi Raikkonen, that is, if they are behind in making payments to him, chances are they're behind making payments to employees also and suppliers also. So, which all leads me to believe that, you know, even Romain Grosjean may not be safe.
No, oh, I agree.
Especially if this homie-led Infinity Racing partnership with money from Middle East,
right,
if that doesn't pan out.
Correct. But Romain Grosjean seems to be pulling his own.
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic race for his weekend. But in quali, of course, it's Sebastian Vettel on pole again. Lewis Hamilton struggling a little bit. I think Mercedes is struggling with the 2012 Pirellis. Mark Webber was third. Of course, he takes a 10-grid penalty for what was deemed goofing off. The three strikes law and you're out.
Yes, well, that grid penalty was for his Tijuana taxi ride with Nando.
very good friends, by the way. Romain Grosjean moved up to third. Nico moved up to fourth. Fernando to fifth. Felipe Massa to sixth. Nico Hülkenberg to seventh. Esteban Gutierrez to eighth. And Kimi Raikkonen to ninth. And Sergio Perez moved up.
Talking of Nico Hülkenberg, you know, he raced with Kaufman Racing. I know we're good friends with them. And they put a lot of pictures on their Facebook and all that. They also had Esteban Gutierrez, Robin Frains, and Stoffel Vandoorne. So they put a lot of people through the system. And Lars Kaufman, who's the son and team manager, he is very good friends with Nico Hülkenberg. So I'm thinking, you know, let's see how things pan out. But I am looking to make a trip back home sometime in the early part of next year before the racing action starts. And I'm seriously thinking about maybe, you know, spending about a week near the Swiss-German border, because there are some people I really would like to meet and interview, Alain Prost, Jackie Stewart, and hopefully we can get an audience with Nico Hülkenberg also.
Fantastic! Now, let's go to the Korean Grand Prix, because I know, oh my goodness, wait a minute, I'm jumping the gun.
Yes. See, this is the reason it should not be near the DMC.
That's true.
No, just I had some more stuff here. And actually, thanks to Mr. Peter Brysia for putting this up on the forum, which I really appreciate. So I put down some notes here. May I proceed with your express written consent, please?
By all means.
Thank you, sir. Okay, this was Sebastian Vettel's 42nd pole. That is, and you're talking about guy being cocky. 42nd pole position, Clark. I mean, just made his debut.
A little over 100 starts?
Yeah, he made his start in U.S. Grand Prix 2007. Wow. And it was 200. This will make you happy. 208th pole position for a Renault engine, which is now same as Ferrari. So now Renault has reached the top.
The pinnacle, my friend.
In pole positions. Very impressive for your boys from Viry Châtillon. And they have a lot of experience in turbo power. So my call is 5 in a row for Seb next year. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong.
Yeah, me too. Okay, it was also the 125th pole for a German driver. Now joined second with Brazil. And Britain leads with 217. That's a huge margin. But not surprising, given the level of interest in motor racing there. Okay, Sebastian Vettel and LCH shared the front row for the 20th time in Korea. That's the same number as Vettel and his teammate Mark Webber. So, proceed, please.
The lights go out, and guess who's leading the race?
Oh, man, not Massa.
No, it's not Massa. Unfortunately, Massa has another bad day. The reason, for me, why he is not going to get signed to Lotus F1, and Hülkenberg is. He's got to stop this stuff. He's goofing off. He needs to go back to Brazil. But he's still a fighter, so we'll give him that much. Anyway, the lights go out. Sebastian Vettel blasts. And, of course, he builds a lead within a few chicanes, a few corners, and he's already...
Oh, yeah.
It's very impressive. I mean, no mistakes, no bogging down, no clutch problems. It's amazing. Very, very impressive. Lewis Hamilton, he's got to fight off the fast-starting Romain Grosjean. He can't manage it for that long. And Grosjean uses the slipstream down the first long straight to get second place. And it was very exciting. Grosjean has a great race. And he looks like the only dude on the track at the beginning of this race that maybe could challenge Vettel. Keep up with him a little bit. That was exciting.
No, he even said after the race, if there was no safety car period in terms of tire preservation or tire management, they had a shot at winning this. And just for his sake and as a fan of Romain Grosjean, I was thinking, you know, hey, if there's a mistake or a kablamo from Sebastian Vettel, then Romain Grosjean could get his first win.
Yeah, that would be pretty exciting for not only Lotus F1, but for Romain Grosjean because of, you know...
And the nation of France.
Exactly. Les Frogs are really suffering. We need some winning.
When was the last time they won a race?
I can't even remember.
Olivier Panis?
Oh, was it really Monaco?
Yeah, I think it was
Gauloise.
Yeah, something a long, long time ago.
That was a long time ago, yeah. Boy.
And yeah, Mr. Motivation gave him only one.
Canada.
Yeah,
on his birthday.
Yeah. So France needs a victory.
We do need a victory. Anyway, the battle for 5th, 6th, and 7th, 8th, and 9th was exciting. We had 5 abreast. We had that some excitement.
That was fantastic.
That was exciting.
I mean, that was like watching an oval race, yeah, in IndyCar racing.
Yeah.
That was, and I, surprisingly, we did not have a lot of, like, you know, people hitting each other and stuff like that.
Crashado?
Yes.
Now, of course, we saw Felipe Massa spins. Everybody goes around him, and Fernando goes around him on the left. It was exciting, but everybody in Brazil was going, ay, 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 ay. But nevertheless, very exciting stuff. And for me, the excitement of the first few laps of this Grand Prix, you're going to be shocked. And a lot of people didn't talk about this, especially on the coverage of the tele, and that was Pastor Maldonado.
He made a good start.
9 positions.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the most impressive start of the season for Pastor.
Yeah, without putting anybody outside.
Exactly.
The side.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not playing pinball wizard.
Yeah.
It was very, very exciting, and I felt good for him because I know he's paying a lot of money for that seat. Williams needs anything to grab onto. And I thought Pastor, I mean, it was a great moment. I was very, very impressed, and you have to just love it. Of course, Force India's Adrian Sutil, his front wing is damaged, and he's crying and saying he's losing power, so he's heading back to the pits. And by lap 2, Sebastian Vettel has a lead of already 2.6 seconds. Game over for everybody. Let's just talk about who is going to be second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And that's really where the race was at in this entire Grand Prix.
Yeah, fantastic.
Fantastic. Hülkenberg was absolutely outstanding.
That was, you know, like somebody even wrote in a newspaper, you know, somebody give him a fast car, please.
Yes.
Talking of him, many years ago when Esteban had joined Kaufman Racing in Formula BMW, we're talking, I think, 2008, I believe it was. I remember talking to Josef Kaufmann. You know, Josef Kaufmann raced in Formula 3, and one of his drivers was Ari Leuendijk. So he goes back many, many years. And I remember him saying to me that he was very, very high on Esteban Gutierrez because he said, you know, data shows he's always on the limit all the time. And for Hülkenberg, his comment was to me that I think he is better than Sebastian Vettel because he won the Formula BMW in his first year, not the second. So, and you know, you really don't know how good a kid is unless he gets into a good car. And we all know Sebastian Vettel will not be winning anything if he was Pastor Maldonado's teammate.
Exactly.
But, you know, that doesn't mean
anything
in terms of what he has, in terms of negativity for what he has achieved.
Absolutely.
And then once you get a good driver as a teammate, then you really find out how many carats you have in your diamond. You know what I'm saying?
And that's why I was really disappointed with Ferrari, even though I love Kimi Raikkonen. I think he's wonderful. But I think Kimi Raikkonen going back to Ferrari, you can never go back home, Nasser. You know that. I think they should have gotten Hülkenberg while he's young. You know, he deserves to be in a top team. And these top teams should. And that's why I applaud McLaren for signing Sergio Perez, taking a chance.
Yes, they did.
And you have to, you know, that's excitement. It adds excitement. We know what Kimi's going to do at Ferrari. He's going to be extremely competitive and win races. It's no doubt.
Well, it could be the best thing for Sebastian Vettel.
That's true.
Because, you know, he's going to take points from Nando. Nando is going to take points from him because Nando is going to beat him fair and square in some races. It's not going to be a cakewalk for Kimi or Nando. Big winner will once again be Sebastian Vettel.
Huh? What?
Unless you believe what Mark Webber's replacement, his Aussie mate, is saying, Ricciardo. He's saying he's going to take the fight to Sebastian Vettel.
And he's capable.
Oh, yeah.
If their car are just as good next year, and of course Adrian Newey is very capable, because I don't think the motor is going to be that big of a problem next year. It's going to be exciting. Lap 6, Felipe Massa is now back into 16th place. Grosjean is hanging on to Vettel better than anybody, and that's for me, is vive la France, we can have a chance. Lap 7, Williams, Pastor Maldonado pits from 10th. Which was pretty exciting. I mean, he was way back there. I was very, very, very impressed. Now, on lap 9, Fernando Alonso is really struggling for grip. The Ferrari driver drops back from Nico Hülkenberg's Sauber into the clutches of Kimi Raikkonen. The Finn gets a better exit onto the straight and glides past the Ferrari for 6th place. Do you think Kimi enjoyed passing Fernando?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, that's what's so good about Fernando. He gives everybody a moment to shine.
Oh, lap 11, Clark.
Lap 11, there's a drive-through penalty for Caterham.
Let me ask you a question, talking about Nando, which you do all the time.
I do.
Do you think he will see the end of his contract with Ferrari?
It's very tough to do. It depends on what happens. And I'm very, very serious. If Lotus F1 can get their act together and really get some financing, because they've got a good package, we know that. They're looking pretty strong, because it would never surprise me if Fernando has to go back again to Renault.
I have even read, I don't know if it was a rumor or just sort of somebody trying to be funny, but there was a news item that Renault may come back to.
And I've seen those rumors. They're circulating a lot in France. Renault is having some success. They're investing all over the globe. They're selling cars, and they could come back, because they don't want to see an opportunity slip by where they could get Fernando, Oviedo Blue.
Because, you know, their major one of the sponsors is Total Oil Company, and Renault, you know, it will be very nice.
It would be.
I have an inkling that Nando, as we have seen, does not take being beaten very nicely like any other top-line driver. I have a feeling if Kimi Raikkonen basically takes hold of being the numero uno at Ferrari just by performance, you know, he's not going to go and have cappuccino with Luca Baldessari or Luca Montezemolo, but pure performance. If he ends up winning two or three races and Nando has won and is trailing by 20 points from Raikkonen, I will not be surprised if Alonso bails out and takes Banco Santander with him.
Yeah, no. Stranger things have happened.
Oh, yeah.
Lap 12, Sebastian Vettel pits, despite being under extreme pressure by Lewis Hamilton. Romain Grosjean has actually closed the gap to Vettel. This race is far from over, folks. Mark Webber leads after all this pit action. Good for Mark Webber. 10th place grid penalty. He's leading a little bit. That might boost his morale.
Yeah, you know what? You have to look at the positive side of anything negative happening in your life. You know what was the good thing about his 10th grid penalty? I think it saved him from another embarrassment of a slow start, which, aww, if you're in the middle of the pack, they don't...
Which he does a lot.
Yeah, so...
That's true. And very impressive, after Vettel pits, he gets back out into the lead. Romain Grosjean, very impressive. Good defensive driving. Really, almost a much more mature Romain Grosjean than we've seen earlier, especially from last year. So I think he's grown. I think he's staying at Lotus F1 because they'd be fools to let him go. He's fast, he's quick, he's still young, and he's French.
Yeah, and, you know, plus, people who employ him are also his part of his management team, so the ball is in his court to stay with that team, you know.
Absolutely. On lap 17, the team radio tells Romain Grosjean to look after your front right tire. And apparently the front right tire is wearing out on a lot of cars. It's pretty interesting. Lap 18, Nico Rosberg puts his DRS to good use, crushing past the Toro Rosso of Daniel Ricciardo. And maybe that won't be happening next year. We'll see how Daniel does. It's going to be great. Lap 20, Toro Rosso removed a pigeon from the side pod of Ricciardo's car. A Korean pigeon, Nasser.
Oh, boy. I've never had a pigeon at a Korean barbecue.
No. So, is that roadkill, technically?
I guess so. Was there a message with the
No the messages on the feet.
Yeah, okay.
No messages on the feet. So, it could have been a long-lost homing pigeon from the Korean War. Still searching.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Lap 22, Sebastian Vettel responds with the fastest lap of the race. And his lead is up to 4.1 seconds on Romain Grosjean. Outstanding job by the Frenchman. Lap 26, Paul DiResta really having a bad day. I mean, the whole familia is having a bad weekend.
Yeah, and Paul DiResta, you know, I think...
What's happened there?
When Nico Hülkenberg got there, he kind of like was a wake-up call for him. The first year of Paul DiResta was... I mean, he did a very good job when he came out of DTM. But now it just looks like that he's
lost. I mean, is the car
lost
that bad? I mean, he's making foolish mistakes on this lap 26. You know, he spins on the fresh tires, crashes out. I mean, it's not looking good for him.
Yeah, you know, with all these young drivers knocking on the door, Kevin Magnussen with McLaren backing, and these people have to be very careful.
I totally agree. Lap 28, Nico Rosberg is catching Lewis Hamilton at 2.5 seconds a lap. Pretty impressive. And Lewis Hamilton is struggling with this car, with the tires. You know, sometimes you'll get on the phone and say, hey, these tires suck.
No, best part was when he was asking for suggestions.
Yeah. Any suggestions?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why he's not happy driving in fifth, sixth, seventh position. He's confused.
No, no. I've never seen a top driver who was happy in his element if he was not winning a second. They freak out.
Yeah. Now, Kimi Räikkönen pits on lap 27, and he's going to try to stay to the end of the race on these tires. Kimi is the manager of tires this season for sure. Very, very impressive. Lap 29, Nico Rosberg pits. And the mechanic at the front of the car is really struggling to get that nose off the car. Now, that was a really bizarre incident when the nose dropped on Nico's car.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much carbon fiber barks. Very impressive night show. See, now, if this was a night race, that would have been exciting.
Yeah, it would have made it on the evening news.
Yes, no, for sure. No, that was very bizarre. I don't think I've ever seen a Formula One car's nose just drop. So they might have some structural issues there because really that nose, the way it's hooked up to the Formula One vehicle, is part of the crash testing and the safety of the vehicle. So if that's falling off, the FIA might need to investigate, Nasser. Any thoughts on the race so far?
Very, very exciting. And then we had a... You know, I'm sure you're going to come to it, the SUV at the track. That was beautiful.
Yes, that was very interesting. And that was, and the FIA admits, and this is where the Weber barbecue comes in. Fascinating stuff. Mark Weber is an interesting person. Not sure what's going on there, but the SUV, and that was, I mean, it said fire truck in small letters on the bumper, but it sure didn't look like a fire truck. I mean,
yeah, and I was, it was like around midnight, past midnight when this race was going on our time, and I thought it was kind of strange that it's coming on the when the yellow is out. Apparently it came on, the vehicle came on when it was a live track. Is that correct?
Correct.
Wow.
That's what was so bizarre, and Vettel saw the vehicle and, of course, immediately slowed down. Very strange stuff. And it was actually just a Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah, and this is on the same league as pace car being stolen at Talladega or Atlanta during the playing of the national anthem many years ago. And I remember many years ago there was an ambulance on the track for a lap or so. And our friend Jeff Andretti, you remember him, Jeff Andretti?
Yeah.
He crashed into that ambulance.
Yeah, no, but still, so Sergio Perez flat spots his tire, and it somewhat explodes. I mean, the carcass comes completely apart, and Pirelli doesn't like pictures like this. It reminds us of Silverstone, Pirelli issues, but of course Pirelli said it wasn't our fault, it was Sergio's fault. But still, Mark Webber, once again, Mr. Bad Luck, he's right behind the debris as it explodes, punctures his tire, he has to pit. A big disaster, and of course... The debris is everywhere. We have to have a safety car.
Caution.
A caution.
A Korean caution.
This was a Korean caution, and that meant it was break time. It was a Korean caution for kimchi.
Wow.
I know. It's almost like the KKK.
Oh, wow. Even better.
I know. So, very interesting stuff. The safety car is out. Sebastian Vettel and Romain Grosjean both pit and rejoin in first and second. Kimi Räikkönen is up to third, having pitted earlier with Lewis Hamilton fourth, Nico Hülkenberg fifth. Mark Webber pitted twice in as many laps, once for the mediums, second for the options. Not sure why he's done that, and that was bizarro. Poor guy. The bad luck just stacks up for Mark Webber. I love it because Mark Webber gets on the phone, and he goes, "Why did we choose the options?" And the engineer goes, "We had nothing left." That's unbelievable.
No, he should have said, "Because you're Mark Webber."
Yeah, that's what he should have said. But don't you... I mean, this would never happen to Sebastian Vettel. You got to admit, there's a little bit of funkiness going on at Red Bull. That's why I'm surprised they don't stick Ricciardo in. Webber is laughing, mocking Pirelli. I mean, he doesn't care about 10th-place grid penalties. Mark Webber doesn't care if he's going to get another win because he knows he's not. He's not going to be allowed to. Not the wrong tires. They're running out of shoes. There's fire, brimstone. Something is going on here. Get Ricciardo in the car. Get him some seat time. My tip of the week.
You know, the only thing is missing, Mark Webber cannot start the Indian Grand Prix because he didn't get the visa.
Exactly. Poor Mark Webber.
Yeah.
So loving. Lap 38, Kimi Räikkönen passes Romain Grosjean at turn one. Now, that was feisty. That was machismo. No, "Hey, I am faster than you. Let me by." No. He chopped.
Yeah, and that's and somebody's going to experience that next year.
I knew yeah. you were going to say that. I knew. That's why I mentioned
that was,
this.
That was
very interesting.
That's now, a defining moment of a great driver.
Absolutely.
It's
and
the physical pass at Suzuka. That's what Nanda is going to get from Kimi, I'm telling you.
Well, it was a great pass, and what I liked about it, maturity was there for Romain. He didn't do anything stupid.
Now he tried, I think.
Well, I think a little bit, yeah. But we're not seeing the crashado.
Yeah, yes.
That's very important. Finish these races. Get on those podiums. So, very exciting. And, of course, on the following lap, we have Mark Webber, who gets into it with Adrian Sutil.
That was Sutil's fault.
It was Sutil's fault. But, unfortunately...
Now, how come you're not asking how come he did not crash into Sebastian Vettel?
Why?
That's not the Red Bull making.
I know. What's going on there? Why? See, Mark Webber can't even... He's not paying the right people on the track. What is he doing? It's fascinating, but interesting crash. Definitely Adrian Sutil's fault. Adrian Sutil certainly did apologize after the Grand Prix to Mark Webber. But we have fire.
Did he ask?
I bid you to burn.
Wow.
It was exciting.
The crazy world of Adrian Sutil.
Yes.
I have a question. After he apologized, did he ask Mark Webber to come and have a glass of champagne with him?
Yeah, I think he had some brass knuckles in his pocket.
There you go.
Yeah. So, fascinating stuff. And, of course, the marshals are... And you can see Mark Webber sort of telling the marshals, well, you need to spray over here, and you need to spray over there. It was a pretty bad fire. I mean, he's toasting these cars pretty quickly. And what's really shocking for me is, does the team have another complete... They're going to have to change the chassis. And we're going to Japan in a couple of days.
There's another reason for putting him in a 2010 car.
Keep up the good work, Nas. The safety car is coming on the 40th lap. Kimi Raikkonen doing a fantastic job. And Romain Grosjean, great restart. Fascinating stuff. Of course, we had the fire truck. It was a little... We had bizarro land just for a second, but it is the Korean Grand Prix.
It happens once in a while.
It does. We get goofy stuff, but that's what it was. Lap 41.
Do you remember some years ago, before the show, we were talking about Simone Di Silvestro. Do you remember some years ago at an IRL race or an IndyCar race, oval race, she had a crash and a car caught fire, and she was having some difficulty getting out of the car?
Yes, I remember that. That was scary.
How long it took for the fire people to get there? Normally, they are there before the car even stops. But I don't know what happened. Something went wrong. But, I mean, I thought we're going to have a Swiss fondue here.
Yes. No, Mark Webber, he's smart. He got out of the car fast. It was interesting. The FIA called the fire truck. But, see, the FIA called the fire truck hoping that it was coming out of one corner, but instead it came out from downtown Seoul.
Oh, wow.
So there's a little problem there. And I didn't like that fire truck. In America, we have big red fire trucks. They're obvious. In France, you have the sapeurs-pompiers. Very obviously, big, red. I don't know what that was.
What was it, like a Kia? According to Sebastian Vettel, it looked like a BMW, but he thought it was a Kia or a Hyundai SUV.
Yeah, that's what it was. Anyway, lap 45, really the five-car battle behind
Bastien.
Nico Hülkenberg. Sebastian's got this race in the bag. He's already listening to CDs in the car. You know, German marching music, which is his favorite.
Wagnerian.
Exactly. Things. Exactly. No, but the fight behind Nico Hülkenberg and back down to Nico Rosberg is very good. And it shows how good Nico was. Lewis Hamilton couldn't do nothing with him. Even Fernando Alonso. Nothing. These guys had to settle and settle and settle. And I was very impressed. For those last 10 laps, Nico Hülkenberg showed great race pace. He really was ringing... Smart pace, good decision making. And he was ringing the neck of that Sauber. And it was a great fourth place finish for... I mean, it was almost a win for Nico Hülkenberg. His best finish of the season. For me, it was outstanding.
Yeah, it was a defining moment for him. And he said, you know, it was his best racing performance. And, you know, I kept thinking, you know, this is like 1981 Spanish Grand Prix when Gilles Villeneuve held four or five cars behind him lap after lap. And, you know, the thing about which was very good, he was keeping Lewis LCH behind.
No, it was very impressive.
That's no mean feat.
No, I agree.
So
I agree.
This guy has... I still have to say this, and I've said this many times before. The day I saw Nico, because I remember when he came to A1GP, I think he won on his you know, they used to have two races.
He's still waiting for that paycheck, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, oh yeah, and so is Willie Weber. He went on his first weekend in that series, but the, what I really, really remember always will is his performance in the rain at Sepang. He was in a, he was like a Schumacher Senna type performance. And that day, I just convinced that this kid is very, very good.
Yes. Nevertheless, the fight was very exciting, and Nico Hülkenberg held his own. Of course, Sebastian Vettel wins the Grand Prix.
Now, really?
Yes, shocking, shocking. Damn. Don't even know why I mentioned it. Now, there was a little tit-for-tat at the end. Romain Grosjean had fresher tires, had a faster car than Kimi Raikkonen, but was basically not allowed to catch up to Kimi and pass him. It was time to just finish the race, which is the right thing to do. It's called the team effort.
Yeah, the points they get, that brings a lot of money.
Yeah. So I thought it was a great race, and I thought the podium was loving with both Lotuses up there. Kimi Raikkonen, another consistent podium. He doesn't stop, even with the back pain. That race was brought to you by Aleve.
Yes, temporary relief.
Yes, exactly. So yes. Why don't you give us some facts and figures?
Facts and figures, sir. This is win number 6 from last 8 races. For her Vettel, a race or two away now from his 4th world championship, and that should be fun. Total of 8 wins from 14 races in 2013, not bad. 5 races remain, so we should see Seb get in the double digit, if not a dozen wins. Would it be something if he wins all the remaining races?
No.
That would be pretty sad.
I think it's just going to get people angry all over the world.
Yeah, well, something will happen.
I mean, the next thing you're going to tell me, that the Germans are marching down the Champs-Élysées.
Again? You know, they were talking on, I think it was on the BBC podcast or whatever David Croft is, on the web when I was watching, and they were talking about it. They were having discussion and argument on this. We've not had a wet race this year. I mean, I was there in Malaysia. There was a little bit of rain before the race. So I think there will be, for sure, it won't be in Abu Dhabi. But I think in Japan or Brazil, we may have some, you know, showers, and that may, you know, shift the apple cart.
We need something to really mix it up. I want some excitement.
Yeah. So victory was 160th for Renault engine. That's very, very impressive. And 3rd podium sweep of the year. And apart from a DNF at Silverstone, China and Hispania were the only 2 races where Bastian was not on the podium. So he's having a pretty impressive season.
Yes, it's overly impressive, and his Red Bull is perfect. Yeah. Every time he gets out of the car, he loves his car.
Yeah, I underline the word his Red Bull.
Correct, that's
and
what
Vettel
I said.
And Vettel is only the 3rd driver in history to nail 2 back-to-back pole, win, all laps led, fastest lap combination, and this is just like, it's just going on and on and on. And how old is he?
25.
Just turned 26.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
No.
He may have like 6-7 championships before he gets to 30.
Let's
it's Renault power, Carl.
I know. That's a scary part. I would never think that I would not want a Renault to win, but I'm at that point now. I mean, too much is too much.
Yeah, that's true.
Even for the French.
Yes. At the age of 26, this kid will do what Fangio did back in the day. And he was in his 40s when he won his first title in 1951. And folks, the only thing keeping, this is very important, the only thing keeping the low-key, ever-humble host of F1 Weekly alive is the power Red Bull is using to win these races and championships at the expense of, once upon a time, muy macho hombre de España. I feel sorry for him, and he's got, Oviedo, you've got problems.
Yeah.
Problemas.
And it's got to be tough for him. Having won 2 championships with Renault, and now seeing this German.
You know, it's not the 2 championships that impresses me, because if you have the best car, a good driver will win. But he dethroned Michael Schumacher.
The machismo.
And that's what I cannot believe, that the guy who overthrew, and you remember his race in San Marino?
He overthrew a regime.
Yeah, talk about a regime change. And remember his race in San Marino, Imola?
Unbelievable.
And that guy, in 2007, is having issues with Ron Dennis because he's not slowing down a rookie. I just don't get that.
Well, there was texting, you know. And
yeah, but I mean, it's from dethroning Michael Schumacher? We're not talking here, Jean Alesi.
I know, but in 2007, I think he had some bad paella.
I mean, you know, Joe Ramirez could have fixed that problem for him.
That's very true. If Joe Ramirez was there, it would have been a better situation.
Yeah. The only tune left in Nando's Nano iPod is chairman of the board singing, over and over, I keep going over the world we knew, days when you walked beside me. You know why he has an NO iPod? His Russian chica, whom we don't see anymore, at least I've not seen her, I think she stole his real iPad and iPod. So he's now left with an NO iPod. Things are tough for this guy. And on the other side, Luca, looking forward to the 2014 season, is, I think it was Mary Wells who was singing, "Well, I got two lovers." And I think he's going to choose the one who doesn't scream too much. What do you think?
I think that's beautiful, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Fernando will get back on the podium, but it might be next year.
No, he's going to win races. I have no question about that. And I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for Kimi Raikkonen, because he beat LCH fair and square and caught a few races in 2007.
Thanks. Acknowledging that.
My pleasure. I think Formula One in 2013, San Sebastian, is supremely exciting. Lotus and Eric Bouyer encouraging Grosjean to pass Kimi. If that was so easy, Massa would be 2007 world champion. And then, of course, they did not want him to pass him. And interesting situation there. Since Nando's victory in Barcelona, all nine races have been won by Mercedes and Red Bull. Rosberg taking two and LCH one, while Seb is the sole winner at Red Bull, which is kind of disappointing, I have to say. And Sunday's victory was fourth successive. Remember last year, the guy is unbeaten since Spa, and last year he had a run of four successive wins to get his championship back on track. Remember that?
I do.
Yes. And another German, Nico, was star of Mokpo. The Hulkman was hustling like a top pro and kept LCH and others behind him lapped after lap. And I hope he gets a win next year. That will be very good. He came pretty close to in Brazil last year, if you recall. Now we come to the soft-spoken, should I say, the non-spoken Kimi Raikkonen. Always impressive in race condition. Made the most of an opportunity provided by teammate to pounce on second place. Kimi won the season opener and since then has scored in all but two races and has been on the podium in eight races, so very good. Grosjean, third podium of the season, and still had to endure a come-to-Alain Permain meeting after the podium ceremonies. Apparently, they wanted to read the right act to him. No longer the Maldonado of Marseille, Grosjean has scored points in 9 of the 14 races so far. Very important for a team struggling with disappearing dineros. So this is one reason to keep him. We don't have that problem at that F1 Weekly Palatial Studios, the disappearing dineros. We got the Gutenberg press running, 25.8, no adjustments required, just print one digit, baby. What's that digit, sir?
Zero.
Z-E-R-O. Okay, Nico Hülkenberg, for years we have been singing tunes for Romain and Nico, just like Speed TV used to do for US F1. Remember them?
Oh, yeah, my favorite team.
Yeah. Very happy to see both these youths establish themselves as bona fide Formula One drivers. Hülkenberg was very impressive, keeping F1's official pushy Paul, Mr. LCH, behind him lap after lap. Nico has scored all the 31 points for Sauber team, and that has to get somebody's attention sooner or later. Good chance Romain and Nico will be teammates at Lotus in 2014, and that's what the whole world is saying. And based on some very reliable source, I can tell you there is no love lost between the two. I look forward to some serious cage rattling in that camp if they are teammates. That should be good. You know, there was even talk of Rubens Barrichello.
Now that made me laugh so much. Rubens Barrichello, he's 41 years old, and there was a rumor that he was dealing and making a deal with Sauber.
Yeah, but you know, if he can get $15-20 million package.
That's true. I agree. And Rubens Barrichello, if he can grab and put together a package of money, a big one, he'll go back to F1 as a paid driver. He doesn't care.
Of course. If an 18-year-old can go, what's with the 41 who is the most experienced driver?
Rubens Barrichello, I mean, I'm sure he would probably do decent. I mean, let's not forget, Ron GP, 2009.
Oh, yeah. Jensen, remember what happened to him in the, I think it was a Spanish Grand Prix when he was leading and he made a tire change and, yeah, Jensen Button ate
his. What happened was he looked at his car and there was that number two there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, Jensen Button really rained on his parade. That was his one chance.
With
Schumacher, he was never going to get a chance.
But that was his last chance.
Yeah.
And I don't even, but I can't believe we're actually talking about Rubinho.
Yes, we should move on now. LCH, lucky he left McLaren. They could not even get into Q3 in Korea. raced hard and fared without his usual argy-bargy, let's get physical driving. Interestingly, despite the rap he gets for pushy and rough driving sometimes, this year he has finished in all the races, and Spain was the only race where he did not score points. Most likely to get another win this season if Sebastian has a teriyaki flu at Suzuka. What do you think? Who do you think will win if Nando does not get... I mean, Sebastian does not get a win.
You mean Japan?
In the remaining races.
Oh, well, Japan is an exciting Grand Prix. But the problem is Red Bull is out of control. They're unstoppable. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with Mark's car, but Sebastian Vettel, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I expect Kimi Raikkonen to do well in Suzuka. He loves Suzuka. All the drivers love Suzuka.
It's a driver's track.
It is. The problem is it's the Pirellis. Who's going to have good time with the Pirellis? If we don't have rain, if it's a warm, beautiful, late summer afternoon, I'm afraid it's not going to be much different than what we've been seeing in the last four races. I'm sorry to say.
And we're going to end this thing segment with Nando. He was my shock of the race. Qualified fifth and finished sixth. Normally he's moving up very quickly. Is he trying to be Felipe Massa now? What do you think?
I don't think so, but I know one thing.
Yes.
The DNF Chapel is booked till the end of the season.
All by Nando? 2 wins and 8 podiums in 14 races would bring a championship in the 1970s or 80s, but today for Nando, that means 77 points behind Sebastian Vettel, and I think the party is over in the next race or the second.
Oh, absolutely.
New rules and a reawakened Raikkonen as teammate for next year remains to be seen how Nando will react when the other guy goes faster in quali and race, and we all know it's going to happen on a few occasions. Suzuka is next, a track designed by a Dutchman, John Hugenholtz, fantastic track, and of course Honda's test track. Seb winning again could result in some sizzling teriyaki title for Dr. Marco's Wunderkind. I think Nando is going to finish in the top 5, I'm pretty sure, but if he has some situation he does not finish or is like 9th and Seb does what he does every race now, then, you know, he may have a few geisha dolls at Suzuka to play with.
Well,
off to the race.
Nando should be happy. At least Vitaly Petrov is not on the track.
What did he do? Abdab.
Exactly. Anyway, boys.
You know, you mentioned that. I was in Abu Dhabi at my friend's house. I did not go to the race on Sunday, but I was there on Saturday. And my friend has no interest in racing. I told him, you know, this is a championship final race. Decided who do you think is going to win? And I said, you know, this guy, Ferrari guy is going to win because the guy ahead of him, he's going to crash any time. And after 10, 15 laps, he said, well, he still hasn't crashed. I said, no, if he does not crash, he's going to spin out. I was convinced that something will happen, but it was not to be.
Well, that was probably the longest first segment of F1 Weekly in a long, long time.
Well, we're coming to the end of the season. We're going to miss Formula One, Clark.
That's true. We are. Excellent. Outstanding. We've got a Motorsports Mondial coming up, Nasser. We also have 50 words from the forum, which is lively and exciting, as usual.
And an interview.
With your buddy, Stefano Coletti.
Yeah, he is raced in America also, which was interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, my name is Dan Gentile. I'm the car event director here at Club Autosport. People come and enjoy our free coffee, our shops. We have different themes every month. This month we have the GTO Club. Next month we have a rally. So we try to do something different so that people will keep coming back and experiencing the Carson Caffeine at Club Autosport. So come out, enjoy the cars, enjoy Club Autosport, and we hope to see you here soon. Thanks.
It's a really wonderful facility. The diversity of the cars here is what excites me, because it's not just the new cars, but it's classics, this car and a Ferrari that just pulled in. It's great to see them on the road, and this encourages people to come out and really enjoy each other, see the cars, and talk about them. So, great venue. They have a lot of other facilities here that I think I would end up using too for business, but for personal, it's wonderful.
And that's Club Autosport, 521 Charcot Avenue in beautiful San Jose, California. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we are really going around the world because we're going to go first to Houston, Texas. It's like a whole other country, as they say. Big news was the massive crash involving Dario Franchitti. His car went into the catch fencing after colliding with Takuma Sato's car. You know, Takuma Sato is like the Maldonado. He's always there if something goes wrong. A very, very scary crash. And, you know, Dario was flown to hospital and will make full recovery, which is good. And unfortunately, some spectators were also injured by flying debris. You were watching the race, I understand.
Correct.
It was very, very scary. And this really, you know, brings home the point. Motor racing is very dangerous no matter what you do. I mean, things can go wrong. And this came towards the end of the race. Hate to say this, but this was the way it happened. It was eerily close to the crashes of poor Dan Weldon and Jeff Krosnow. Car going into the catch fencing is not a good thing. And we wish everybody full recovery and full and speedy recovery. This was a doubleheader in Houston. Scott Dixon won the opening round for Chip Ganassi's racing. And Chip Ganassi is dumping Honda for next year and going to Chevy. So that's the big news in IndyCar racing. And the second race was won by Will Power, who is in a Chevy powered for Penske Racing. Any comments on that race?
And I thought it was exciting. I'm confused on why they're doing a Saturday race and a Sunday race. But, you know, I try to support IndyCars. I was really happy for Simona Di Silvestro.
She's really on your mind today. This is like the 50th time I've heard her name.
Well, you know, Simona's my friend on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Lovers.
Wow.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, that's good. No, she's a good racer and has done well over the years. Also, there was a Pro Master race in Houston with IndyCars. Matthew Brabham won again. He has already wrapped up the championship. And hopefully, you know, I'll get in touch with him. Very cool kid when I interviewed him last time through Skype, the wonders of Skype. That will, hopefully, we'll do it again. And your homeboy, Sébastien Ogier, won his home rally, Rally Francia, in WRC.
That was exciting.
Yeah, and it was good to see this name again. Remember Kazuki Nakajima?
Exciting.
Yeah, there was a Japanese GT race at Autopolis Circuit in Japan, and race was won by James Rossiter and Kazuki Nakajima. Talk about has been of Formula One. Autopolis Circuit hosted Formula One in the 90s. I believe it. The IDA Circuit is called the Autopolis Circuit, right?
Correct.
If I'm not mistaken.
Indeed.
Yeah. Okay, and James Rossiter, I believe, had a testing role with Honda or Bar Honda or, you know, one of those days. And we all know the great season Kazuki had in F1 with Williams' team, highlight of which was knocking down his crew at Interlagos. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Kazuki Nakajima. Now, this was kind of strange. Salo singing Me and Bobby Fuller. Ex-F1 driver Mika Salo was recently arrested in Finland after returning from the Singapore Grand Prix. He was given 2 days of free accommodation courtesy of the Finnish government. Tax fraud are the charges, and of course, he is denying any and everything, that there is nothing, no fraud there. So we'll figure out. We'll sort it out pretty soon. But not good for Finnish drivers, these ex-Finnish drivers. You know, JJ Lehto had his problem.
Mm.
And now the next item, this is very, very bad. And now to some serious charges against an ex-IRL driver, John Herb. Was arrested this week in Naples, Florida for child pornography and other serious crimes, which are beyond pathetic. And I won't get into it.
It's disgusting and it's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, and anybody who wants to read it can do a Google and go from there. Okay, now we come to famous last words. Today come from Lewis Hamilton, escorted in Guardian newspaper of London Town. LCH is talking about the attendance at Yongam Circuit. He says, and I quote, "They could at least put cardboard cutouts of people in there so you could look out at them," end of quote. Can you imagine 100,000 cutouts of Psy? Opa Gangnam style.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, I suggested the mannequins to the government of Korea, and they turned me down.
Really? Why is that?
I also suggested that why don't they give free tickets to the military? They can use a break.
Now, which one there? Is American military there? Korean? North Korean?
The whole kit and caboodle.
Everybody? Yeah, maybe motor racing will make them friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was my... Yeah, no, I was denied.
Wow.
So thanks, Naz, for another great, outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now we have a couple of more items. We've got an interview with Stefano Coletti and 50 words from the forum. So, Nasser, take it away.
Well, Stefano Coletti is from Monaco, and he's very quick. And this year he had a pretty big lead in the GP2 Championship, along with him and Fabio Laimer. I had an inkling one of them will win the championship. And like five races ago, it looked like Stefano is going to take it, but then things did not work out for him. He is not even in the top three. Quick driver, nice guy. It was good to meet him. He has raced here in the United States also, and his familia has known the Rosberg family for many, many years, actually before he was even born. So my thanks to him, and please enjoy this conversation with Stefano Coletti.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Spa with Stefano Coletti. Stefano, good to meet you. How are you today?
Good. Weather is perfect, so couldn't be better.
How do you like this track? Is there anything as exciting as Spa?
Well, there is. It's one of the nicest tracks in the world. I mean, you can ask any driver, he will tell you the same. I think between slow corners and fast corners here, you have a mixture of everything, and it's very exciting to race here.
Now, I understand it was your mom who took you to a karting track for the first time. What do you remember most from your first experience in a kart?
First time I went on a go-kart was when I was 7. And it was my mom who actually brought me there because some friends were doing karting. So I went there and I tried. And since I tried, I never wanted to stop. And my dad never wanted me to start racing. So for 2 years, I tried to convince him, and in the end, it was my mom who pushed him to make me do it. So I have to say thank you to my mom.
No, your last name is Italian, and your dad was still not interested in racing? That's surprising.
No, the thing is, he used to be a lot involved into Formula One a few years back, and he knew how difficult this universe was, so he didn't want me to get involved, but in the end, you know, he couldn't do anything when I was asking him and begging him for 2 years in a row every day that I wanted to drive, so he just made me start.
Great. In 2004, you won the European Championship and the prestigious Margutti Trophy. Tell us a little bit about these achievements and who was the competition back in your karting days?
Well, it was. I did all my karting career with more or less all the guys that are racing with me now. I mean, Laimer, Calado, Bianchi, it's all the guys that were racing against me. And when I won the European Championships, I actually won it in front of Bianchi, who was second, and Calado, who was third. So the level was already really high then. And I mean, I had a hell of a time at that time. It was really good. Karting was really nice. And I miss it a bit. I have to be honest, karting was nice. So, but you know, you have to go forward in a career, so you have to go do racing.
Let me ask you a question. What do you learn most in karting that helps you in automobile racing? Or in other words, can you become a good driver without much karting experience?
I don't think you can nowadays, because karting teaches you a lot, especially in how to fight and how to overtake. And there's a lot of fighting going on in karting, and I think that if you don't go through there, you don't have the basics. So it's a step you need to go through if you want to race cars.
You mentioned Laimer and Bianchi. Were they very, and Calado, were they also very quick in karting?
They were already. I mean, Calado was two years in a row finished third in the European Championship. And Laimer was also very quick. Bianchi was always really, really quick in karting. So they were always already fast since we're kids. I mean, the competition was already there. And it's nice to actually see that we're fighting against the same people arriving in GP2. You know, it's quite good.
Okay, next 2 years you raced in Formula BMW. What was the biggest challenge you faced adjusting from karting to single-seater racing?
It was difficult, to be honest. My first year was kind of a disaster, but I had a lot of problems with my team, and I couldn't get used to the racing world. I mean, the bigger cars, and it wasn't easy, but I have to say that it was a lot of learning. Because in that year I started a lot of times in the back, so I had to always make good starts and fight a lot in the first few laps and know how to go through the accidents and everything. So it was, I think, a good year to learn. And then immediately in the second year everything started to go much better. So
now in 2006 you had a great time racing in America, 3 wins and a podium finish in 4 races. What was your impression of American racing scene, tracks, and fans?
Well, it's a different world, you know. Fans are much more integrated into the racing world, because if you go in the paddock in the States, there's a lot of people in the paddock. So when you go in the paddock in Europe, there is no one. The paddock is pretty close to the public. So in that level, it's much more open for the people to watch, and I think it's nicer for them. And the atmosphere, it's completely different in here. It's, let's say, much more relaxed. Everyone is more friendly than in Europe. Europe is a lot more serious than over there. So it has the good sides and the bad sides.
Okay, and talking on the good side, which one was your choice, hot dogs or cheeseburgers?
Cheeseburgers, definitely.
Very good. Okay, that's our standard question we ask for all drivers who come to America. Okay, any desire to race in any car someday or NASCAR?
Oh, for sure. It's an interesting series. It's one of my first choice after, of course, Formula One. I mean, if I can't get through to F1 for any reasons, my first choice would be IndyCar. So, and I loved, I would love to race in the States anyway. Even if I have a good career here, for sure, it would. I would love to go race there on an after career. You know, the States. I always liked the States. I almost went there when I was younger after BMW and after Renault. I wanted to go there to do a Formula Atlantic, but then things changed and I stayed in Europe. But it's an environment that I really like, and I wouldn't put it on the side. I think it would be, like I said, another choice. If I can't make it to Formula One, for sure I will try to make it to IndyCar.
Okay, great. Now, before GP2, you have also raced in Formula Renault 2-liter, Formula 3, and World Series by Renault. Which series, in your opinion, was the best learning experience?
Well, let's say that Formula 3 and Formula Renault 3.5 are categories where you drive a lot, where the cars are not easy to drive, especially Formula 3 car. And as I said, you take a lot of mileage, you have a lot of driving experience, so it's good for a young driver to go through these categories, because when you're young, you need to make a lot of laps to learn. So, for example, World Series gives you 2.5 hours of practice on a Friday, so it was a good series, a good step to go through World Series before coming to GP2, I think.
And in Formula 3, it was in Formula 3, if I remember correctly, that you and Jules Bianchi played a little let's get physical. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, it was just a little bit of too much talking after a podium, so we ended up with the hands, but it wasn't. I mean, we were young and stupid, and I think we all learned from our mistakes. And now we're back to be friends, so everything is fine.
That's good. Okay, which series, including GP2, have you experienced the biggest challenge to get on the podium and win races?
I think Formula 3 and GP2 are the hardest series. I mean, Formula 3 is hard because you can do a lot of things on the car. So the cars are pretty different from one to each other, and it depends on the team you go to. It's harder or easier to be on the podium, but Formula 3 is a very difficult car to bring to the limit, as is GP2. So I think those two are probably the most challenging categories.
If a young driver coming through the system was to ask you, hey, you know, my next step is either going to be GP3 or F3, which one would you recommend and why?
It depends. Honestly, GP3 helps you a lot to now that the car has changed. They have a bigger engine, so the car is quite fast. It's actually faster than a Formula 3 car now. If you want to make the step to GP2, I think GP3 is important because you race the same tracks. And it's important to go and be in the same kind of structure. You know, you arrive, you do half an hour of free practice, half an hour of qualifying, exactly like in GP2, and you have to be ready immediately. So it teaches you how to be ready and how to arrive in the weekend and be completely focused. So I think I would do Formula 3 first, and then I would do a year of GP3 before going to GP2.
Why do you say that?
Because it's important. In Formula 3, you don't do the same tracks. Okay. So you arrive in GP2, you don't have many hours of free practice, actually. You have only half an hour every track. And if you don't know the tracks, you already start with a disadvantage. You need to know how to set up the car and learn the track at the same time, and you're a rookie. So it's a lot of things at the same time. However, if you do GP3, you already make a year of learning all the tracks, and then when you arrive in GP2, you're more ready.
Monte Carlo is your home circuit. How does it compare with Macau Street Circuit?
They're both great. I mean, for me, they're my two favorite circuits. Macau is incredible, especially with a Formula 3 car. You go down the straight at 280 kilometers per hour, which is a lot for a Formula 3, and you arrive in those streets where the asphalt is very messy, it's bumpy, and you pass through the walls, and in some places you didn't have space for 1.5 cars, so it's very exciting. And Monaco, when you drive there at 280-290 in the middle of the walls with a GP2 car, it's a feeling that you can't express anywhere else. It's something really, really nice.
Okay, this is your third season in GP2. You've always been with the Italian team. Is this by design or just the way it worked out?
No, it just worked out that way. My first year, we had a good feeling with Trident, so we went there. And then Coloni was pretty good at the end of 2011, and they asked me to come test. So I went there and I had a 2 days test with them. Everything worked out well, so we decided to sign with them. And then last year we were not very happy with them, so we changed in the middle of the season to Rapax, because when your end of the season, not many teams are free, and we know that Rapax is a good team, as they won in 2010 with Maldonado, and we decided to give it a shot, and in the end we were happy about the team, so we decided to stay. But we didn't look for an Italian team, it just happened.
Okay. The season started in Malaysia, where you were on the podium in both races, winning the sprint race on Sunday. I was also at that event, and boy, what weather they have there. Your thought on racing in that kind of weather, and what's it like in the cockpit?
It's really hot, really, really hot. I mean, Malaysia is not that bad, because when you open the visor, you can get a little bit of, let's say, fresh air, even if it's not that fresh. But when you go to Bahrain, when the heat is higher, you know, and the air is really warm, you can't open the visor, because as soon as you open the visor, it actually burns your face. So it's one is more humid, the other one is a bit cooler but drier. So they're both like very hard conditions. Let's say that in Malaysia this year, for example, in the race, I lost 4 kilos. So it's difficult racing, but you know, that's what we are ready for.
Well, you mentioned Bahrain. You were on the podium in both races, which was round two. And, you know, we're a motor racing podcast, not a political podcast. But I want to ask you this thing. With all that was going on there, did you feel racing was safe there, given the circumstances at the time?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we didn't see any problem being there. I mean, I was walking the streets every night and going for dinners in restaurants, and there was nothing very bad going on. There was a lot of security, which was good. I mean, a lot of checks going to the track, but we didn't feel insecure at all driving there.
And while in Bahrain, did you get to check out some belly dancing?
No belly dancing. In the hotel where I was, there was only one bar, and it was only Russian girls, so no belly dancing.
Okay, great. Was winning in Monte Carlo on Sunday the best feeling you ever had in a racing car?
Sorry, I can't hear.
Okay, winning in Monte Carlo on Sunday, the best feeling you ever had in a racing car?
It was a big, big feeling. I mean, winning in front of all my friends and all the people I know in Monaco and in my own streets, you know, it's something that you can't express. I'm not like I didn't become Monegasque, or I'm born in Monaco and I'm a real Monegasque, and we're there since a lot of generations. So we all know each other, and for sure for a racing car driver in general, winning Monaco is a big thing. But for a Monegasque, I think it's something you can't describe. It's I think I dropped some tears in my helmet before I arrived at the podium, and it's a moment I will never forget in my life.
Starting with Silverstone, the season has not been good for you. What is the game plan at Rapax to turn things around and maintain the championship late till the end?
Well, let's say that we were not on the spot, on the pace anymore in the last few races, but we think we know why now, because I mean today we were first in pre-practice again. We had some technical issues that we fixed in the summer break, and now everything looks back on track. So we'll see what happens this weekend, but I think we're probably gonna be in front again and try to extend our lead again.
Where will we see Stefano Coletti racing in 2014?
I hope Formula 1. It's a difficult question to answer. let's say that first of all I want to win the championship, and then once I win the championship, we'll see what happens. But Formula One is a very difficult world, and we're working on it now. But we're hoping it's going to work out, and we'll see.
Okay. Now, we wish you all the best. Tell us a little bit about Stefano Coletti, the person, not the driver. What kind of music you like, what kind of food, and what's your life apart from racing?
Well, food, definitely Italian food.
Shocking.
Definitely Italian food. I love burgers, though, so I would fit perfectly in the States. Music, I listen to pretty much everything, especially hip-hop and house music. And I like to do a lot of sports, but more not sports in the gym, but more like collective sports, like, I don't know, going to play football or playing tennis or volleyball, or, you know, team sports that I like. And I like to enjoy my time with my friends when I'm home. I do my training and I like to spend time with them.
And will you please tell our listeners your website and if you have a message for them?
Sorry?
If you have a message for our listeners, we have listeners all over the world, and also tell them about your website.
Tell them about my website. What do you want to know about my website?
No, like, what's your web address and all that?
My website is www.stefanocoletti.com, and you have to visit it more because it misses a bit of visits, but it's a nice website, and I hope you'll...
First part is very interesting, and I will let about your how you got your interest in racing, and I will encourage our listeners to go to your website and read it for themselves.
Sorry, I didn't get your...
There's a mention about your parents being on Keke Rosberg's board. That was very interesting. I've never seen any driver ride like that, but that's exciting and very interesting.
Yeah, well, they were on holidays together, and I mean, my dad is a really good friend of Keke and used to be at the time when he was racing, so that's why I told you my dad was a lot involved into Formula One. And well, they went on holidays, and I was conceived on their boat. So.
Great, now you're sailing to success.
I wonder why I'm racing now.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stefano, for another beautiful interview with F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to 50 words from the forum, and I'll go ahead and kick it off, Nasser.
Okay, here we go. Leon Bray says, most of the racing was behind the podium, although Fraggle was encouraged to extract the digit and pass Kimi. Weber continues to barbecue Red Bulls, and the Force India drivers continue to get it wrong. And should be given the flick. Great drives by the Hulk, LCH, and Fred. Pity Williams didn't get a point. It would have helped them pay for Ross next year. Tragic to see Weber giving instructions to fire marshals on how to use an extinguisher, and I think it is first time I've seen a four-wheel drive SUV get lapped by the field. All the idiosyncrasies of South Korea. Nida. Ye says, I don't remember 2000 to 2004 being so tedious. Having said that, there were some brilliant battles all down the rest of the field. I'd just give Seb the championship, tell him to go home, and we'd have some brilliant races. Neon Zapper says it was a Korean War behind Seb's car, which I believe is secretly fueled by Red Bull energy drink. Miguel, one of the most boring Grand Prix in 2013, wasn't quite saved by some exciting backmarker battles. Seb is redefining the backmarker concept to include everybody from P downwards. Tricky Dick, I quite enjoyed the race, but then again, I did only watch the highlights. Vettel's dominance is getting a little too repetitive. Roll on 2014. And Philip Pegler writes, one has to wonder who is going to see sense first when it comes to the future of Nico Hülkenberg. It's nothing short of ridiculous that this guy is stuck in midfield equipment. No one ever won the Kentucky Derby riding a Swiss farm mule, albeit an improving one. Okay, thanks everybody. There you have it.
I want to thank all the listeners. Good night.
Bye-bye.